Yes. Yes, so we believe, oh, thank you. We believe it's both a, you know, a statutory and a due process violation with regard to rights, with regard to notification, with regard to basically, you know, being able to talk about it and have comments on rules such as a deadline and an arbitrary deadline that comes in after the fact. As stated, when he asked for the hearing, the tax director believed that the notice of appeal itself actually gave him a hearing. He did not know that. And then, so in 6 months, when he found out it didn't, he asked for a hearing. And then a year later, a year after asking for a hearing, is when they finally found out that their hearing was denied and got the order at the same time.
Do you know what rule the board relied on for characterizing his request as untimely? I didn't see one in the decision.
There is no statutory rule. There is no statute at all. There's no board rule. There's nothing at all. They actually came up with an insinuation that since he did not ask for the notice of appeal, ask for the hearing in the notice of appeal, that this taxpayer, and I think it's in the opinion, the taxpayer said they didn't need one. That is not the case at all. If you read the notice of appeal, he says nothing about not needing a hearing. And in fact, when he requested the hearing, he said that he thought one came with just filing the notice of appeal. So there is no rule. There's, actually the rule in the board is a hearing as of right. As soon as a taxpayer that has a right, as soon as a taxpayer that has an interest in the case has a right to the appeal. It's actually a mandatory right. So bringing in, you know, an arbitrary and unworkable deadline afterwards does not make sense and is actually a violation of not only that rule, the mandatory, or at least the ability to have the hearing, but we think due process as well. And, you know, one of the issues or excuses was, you know, the efficiency of the court. Well, a year later, this order comes out, and we didn't even hear if the hearing was there or not. So we don't believe that's the way the, you know, the BTA should be, you know, putting in processes. And, you know, as you know, courts favor the taxpayer getting their day in court. So we think an arbitrary rule was a violation. The second thing, if we even have to deal with it, I don't think we do, since we have, you know, Gemmo case and all those cases here in the Supreme Court, is whether or not a non-attorney can actually ask for a hearing. A non-attorney can file a notice of appeal, which, as they're saying, you can ask for a hearing in. So if they can do that, then they should be able to ask for a hearing at any other time. They're not arguing law. They're not making oral argument. They're not making legal arguments by asking.
What do you think of the tax commissioner's argument? I thought the commissioner tried to distinguish those cases because they ran to jurisdiction, and this isn't, you're not trying to preserve or invoke the jurisdiction of the board. The notice of appeal had already been filed, and now we're asking for a hearing. I'm just be curious. I don't think you think that that's a relevant distinction, but I'd like to hear why.
I don't think it's a relevant distinction because it's just like I was saying, it's those cases dealt with filing notice of appeal, which gave jurisdiction. But in that notice of appeal, you could still ask for the hearing. So if a non-attorney can ask for it at that point, then are they saying that the BTA can make another rule that you can't ask a non-attorney once they've done that? I mean, cannot do anything else? In business environment today, you know, businesses can't have attorneys do everything. So they have this rule, Ohio has this rule, which is reasonable that a non-attorney can file this. So I think those cases are not relevant.
What about the
arguments?
The argument that this was an unauthorized practice of law issue, and anytime someone engages in UPL, the document is automatically a nullity.
I think that's the one case that the commissioner relies on is the Oglethorpe case, I believe it is, and it's actually about an attorney that's not from the state filing a written legal brief. Now, that is not the case here. Like I said, this is mainly invoking a right that is in the board rules. It is not arguing legal merit. It's not arguing legal authority. It's basically just invoking that right, and then they could get an attorney for that hearing. So with regard to that, we believe that this court should overrule and remand the case, and with direction, which I'll talk about in a few minutes.
That's your first preference, get the hearing.
remand the hearing, but with, and we'll ask for a direction to the lower court, to the BTA, that the, and I'll talk about it here, that the statutory items at issue that were actually are specifically not included in business fixtures should be directed to be real property as well. And we'll get to that. But you, one of the reasons why is there is no reliable probative support for these decisions by the court, by the BTA. And you can see it in the BTA's own decision. It's contradictory. It says at one point there are no invoices to review, and then it talks about invoices later. It shows that the auditor himself went and was looking at certain documents and saying, well, I need additional ones because some of this is real property, but then does a general, overall, everything's taxable. And then he also takes the tax rate to the whole contract price, even though in the record is an affirmation from the general contractor that sales taxes were paid on certain materials and invoices from subcontractors were there that showed taxes were paid. So right there alone, the notice is invalid.
You said it's in the record. Was that, I thought that the Daimler letter was, remind me again what that was attached to. Was that attached to the notice of appeal or?
It was attached to the notice of appeal, as I believe, as well. But
so,
was,
I mean,
it was also in the auditor work papers as well.
Okay.
I believe. So yeah, it was, I think it was several times in there. So that goes with regard to, sorry, just looking at my time. With regard to those, let me get to the property issues and then, so with regard to the property issues, we believe that, you know, the determination of a business fixture is an ultimate fact, which you, this court can review de novo. But we'd like to first, like I said, have a direction down to the BTA that certain, of the items which are exclusive and which are specifically excluded from business fixtures, such as the HVAC, the plumbing lines, and electrical systems, should all be directed, this court should direct the BTA to say that the statute rules and therefore these are real property and not taxable in the first place. Now, those are, we've seen that those are, you know, common to buildings and they're very common to industrials, industries and other businesses besides, you know, a data center, which my client's was.
I thought the audit report said they're not common to buildings, that this is special equipment specifically tailored to the data center at issue. And it might not be something that you would see if you were to walk into any big box store. I thought that's what the audit report said.
That is what the audit report said. But if you look on the websites, if the auditor would have done a general search on the website of these companies, they have different degrees stuff, and the statute itself doesn't say what degree HVAC. It doesn't say that you can only have the lowest degree. But if you look on their websites, they will actually, the people that produce these HVACs, these electrical systems, show the different industries that they might have started in data, but they show the different industries. And in fact, this court has servers inside now and actually has a publication that talks about security and why data and why servers should be inside for security reasons. So to say that an HVAC that deals with computers is not common to buildings now and is not, you know, relevant to other businesses, we think is just ignoring today's business environment, which the department has changed their own position previously and the courts have overruled previously with regard to computer cabling. That used to be a business fixture as well. But once computers were all over, the department themselves and the courts changed the opinion and said, no, that's real property now. We then looked back at the other, you know, cases that we're talking about and fun time and all, and I'm going to skip right to, you know, fun time. And we still believe under the fun time rule, other issues at items at issue today also are real property or at least fixtures, not business fixtures, such as fire suppression systems. And looking at discussing one case, the Inverness case that came from the BTA itself. In that case, and you'll see this progression throughout the BTA cases since fun time, over and over again, they're showing that, hey, you know, you expand this business fixture and they state it in here. If we were to accept Polaris's argument, the definition of business fixture would necessarily eclipse all definitions of real property. And that's true. But look at the Inverness case where they actually found Fairway Construction, bunker removal, and special irrigation systems to be real property. But yet, now we're going to, the department's going to come and say that a fire suppression system, which is lines of water as well and protects a building, is not real property, but an irrigation system for a golf course is. And then another thing is, if you look at another general website search, you'll see that a lot of different businesses now have different levels of floors for data. As I said, servers come inside and everything, so it's common to a lot of environments now, or a lot of businesses and industries and buildings. And if you look at Palace Hotels, another BTA case, just the most recent one, they found that a dome, glass dome ceiling, along with concrete that was for water slides, additional concrete for water slide support, was real property. Now, if those, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure my law firm wouldn't practice in a glass dome building. But if those are real property, then we believe that all the things that we are talking about here today are also real property and not business fixtures. And I think I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
For the tax commissioner, Ms. Bullis.
May it please the court. In this case, PCM purchased a variety of specialty business fixtures for installation within its data gated center facility. These items, which include a specialty electrical system, HVAC with special cooling system, Your Honor, and an advanced fire protection and suppression system, are not common to buildings by any means. Rather, they were custom designed to support and primarily benefit the IT consulting business and computer business that's operating inside the data center. And therefore, they're business fixtures under Revised Code 5701.03. This court should affirm the BTA and the tax commissioner's decisions as a result. And Your Honor, if I may get a cup of water.
Sure.
I apologize. Your Honor, so if we look at the items that are at issue in this case, excuse me, I'm going to take a drink here. You know, first of all, we have a specialty electrical system here. And just by virtue of their description, it's evident that these things are business fixtures. The electrical system contains what are like giant surge protectors called uninterrupted power supply, or UPS systems for redundancy of power. They power equipment to allow for smooth transition to backup power. So that's one example. The HVA system is also another example. It has special purpose cooling with specialized air conditioning units all throughout the data center. They have equipment on the floor called chillers. And all of these were primarily dedicated to cooling the computer equipment. The record is clear here that the items at issue are business fixtures, because in this case, the data center houses a massive amount of computer systems and servers, and this equipment has to be specially powered. It has to be specially configured to withstand power outages and other anomalies, Your Honor.
Yeah, I got a question. In their brief, or in their reply brief,
yes,
they argued that, and I didn't see anything, and maybe I missed it, that you did not address slabs and four categories, slabs and foundations, the unidentified contract sum,
sure,
the construction management fee, and this other. Mm-hmm. I think your brief lays out your reasons for these other line items.
Sure.
But these four, I was kind of curious what the commissioner's position on those was, because I might have missed it, but I didn't see it in the brief.
Sure, Your Honor. Those items are also within the audit. And in our brief, we do ask the court to affirm the tax commissioner's assessment. We do believe those are also business fixtures because they also support and primarily are benefiting the business operations. The concrete slab serves as the foundation for the data center. And if you look at the business fixture definition, it includes, foundations and supports for machinery and equipment. So it also means those portions of buildings that are specially designed and constructed and used for the business conducted in the building, and includes foundations and supports. So that's why we included that. And that's part of the reason why we also said that the special raised flooring is also a business fixture, because that too allows the data center equipment to stay cool. It specially designed to be reconfigured so that the equipment can be reconfigured, and so that, you know, they can run wire and fiber optic cables underneath the data center. So that is also specially designed to hold the weight of the equipment. So those type of things are business fixtures as a result, because they are primarily benefiting the data center equipment, or primarily benefiting the business that is being operated through the data center. So that's our thought on that, and it was not our intention to leave that out of the brief. You know, we wanted to focus on, you know, the, you know, some of the larger items that were focused on in the audit remarks. We thought that that would, the analysis on those would be, you know, important to the court. But certainly, you know, if the court discovers or determines that there are items that should not be business fixtures, Your Honor, or that are not business fixtures, which we submit to this court that they all are, but certainly that's a determination that the court can make. But when we go on and look at all the things that's all the equipment that's there, all that equipment creates a lot of heat. It creates an enormous amount of heat, and it has to be properly cooled and monitored to prevent that overheating. So you have a special HVA system that is at the data center, and that system uses a water cooling mechanism. It's not like the typical HVAC system that you see in an office building, or in a commercial property, or even a residential property. And it's clear that these different pieces of equipment that are on the floor are industrial-grade cooling equipment, and it's clear that these things are not common to buildings, and that they were primarily dedicated to cooling the data center, because the vast majority of the center was dedicated to this computer room. So that's the other thing with these. If we take a look at, also, my colleague on the other side mentioned the fire suppression system. That is an aspirating smoke detection system. I'm not an expert on that, on what that is, but our understanding is that from the auditor's gathering of information from PCM at the center is that it collects and detects differences in air condition, it detects temperature, basically detects the overheating of equipment in case there is a fire. So it has a heightened capability to do that, and it's not standard in a typical commercial building also. So, you know, those are just a few of the things that were observed by the auditors. And, you know, Your Honor, those observations were not made speculatively. They were not assumptions that were made. That auditor did a personal walkthrough tour of that building and also received a lot of information from PCM itself about that equipment. And you know, also used the best available information, like documentary information from PCM, which is in the record, about it. So all those things are business fixtures, and the key here is, you know, whether these items were specially designed and constructed and used for the business conducted in the building. I think that is the core statement in the plain language of the statute that helps us to determine what is primarily supporting the business operations. These items are heightened in capability, and they're heightened to specifically to support the data center, and they're not found commonly in buildings. You know, the other item that I did want to mention are security installations. So if we look at how the security apparatus was installed in the center, again, that is a much more sophisticated apparatus than you would see in any commercial building, or even like in this court, Your Honor. So the security installation, basically what it was installed to do was to manage access to the data center floor, and to do that with key cards, with pulse and fingerprint checks, basically there's camera systems that visually monitor their computer equipment because it's sensitive data that's being held there. And it's more extensive than any standard commercial security system. So that was another reason. Now, we did want to address PCM's claim with regard to hearing, Your Honor. If I may look and see how much time I have. So, in our view, Your Honor, the BTA properly held within its discretion that PCM did not show good cause for why it requested its hearing so untimely.
What's your response that the statute doesn't even contain a good cause requirement?
Sure. So, Your Honor, the statute in Revised Code 57-1702E, it does say that upon application of any interested party, the board has to order a hearing. So there's a requirement in the statute. We fully acknowledge that. The board's rules also require an appellant to request the hearing, though. So under revised...
They did that, right?
They did request a hearing. So we have that here. So the board... But in its rules, the board says under 5717-1-07, the board presumes that no hearing is required in any appeal unless scheduled under under Administrative Code Section 5717-1-16A. If we look at that section, the board's rule says hearings are not scheduled and cases heard on record, on the record from the lower body, unless the hearing is requested. So that's what the board's rules say. We all agree.
Which he did, right?
Which he did. So let's move on to the next point. But I just wanted to make that clear because implicit within those rules, Your Honor, implicit within those rules is that that request has to be made within a reasonable amount of time. Now, what does reasonable mean? It could mean anything. You know, who knows what reasonable means?
It doesn't give them much guidance, though,
right.
Does it?
Right, it does.
I mean, shouldn't
not.
We have fixed
it does not.
Timelines for doing things? I mean, the
sure.
statute says... I believe you have 60 days to appeal the final determination
sure.
to the board, and it doesn't provide a timeline for requesting hearings
well,
within the same statute. I mean, the General Assembly clearly knows how to include a timeline if it wants to, and it didn't there. I'm having trouble figuring out where we would mark the time for them to request a hearing.
Sure, and it's a tough decision to make, Your Honor. But we do know, we would submit to this court that in this case, it was very unreasonable. In this case is the perfect fact pattern of showing unreasonableness, that shows unreasonableness. And here's why. So when the board, when the appellant filed their notice of appeal, the board notified the parties via a docketing letter that the case had been set for written argument. And that is because the appellant indicated in the notice of appeal that a hearing is unnecessary. And if you look at the docketing letter, it says that. It says that appellant has indicated in it that it's unnecessary. If you request a hearing within 30 days, another party requests it, then the board will take that written argument date and change it into a hearing date. So appellant's representative was notified that this was set for written argument, and he received this letter, and that's the letter that that should have given him his first notice that it was set for written argument, because what he's saying is he thought his notice of appeal filing was a request for a hearing. That is the only reasoning that he offered here. The second thing that happened is the parties went ahead and filed a joint motion to extend the briefing date. So by virtue of joining our side, the Tax Commissioner's counsel to extend the briefing date, the appellant really made an affirmative acknowledgement that that he knew that this case was set for written argument and not for hearing.
Do you think that, I thought I read in your brief that that you thought that when he, or maybe the board thought when he requested a hearing, he was engaged in the unauthorized practice
yes.
of law. Can you reconcile that with... I think your predecessor at the proceedings below actually, they filed a joint motion to continue the proceedings. I'm having trouble squaring counsel
sure.
joining the tax director.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Motion to continue proceedings, but also saying he can't file a hearing request.
Sure.
And maybe I'm confused, but I.
Sure.
Seems to be some tension there, at least.
Your Honor, I don't mean to be that way, but. You know, I was not the attorney during the trial period in this case before the board, so it was a different attorney. But my thought would be is that that attorney was probably fairly new in our section and probably didn't understand those procedures. But let's say that's the case. Let's say that the request for hearing was not the unauthorized practice. We would argue that it was, Your Honor. We would, and here's why, because it was made within a motion. It was styled as a motion to remand and a request for hearing in the same document. And we would submit to the court that that is the unauthorized, that document is the unauthorized practice of law. And, you know, the board cited the Oglethorpe case. In their view, they believed that the request was more like a filing of a brief and less like the filing of a notice of appeal, more like filing of a brief in the sense that a brief is the unauthorized practice potentially.
What's your response to their reliance on the NASCAR and the GEMO cases? Those cases, it seems to me, at least one way to read them is if the statute authorizes a specific action to be taken and it doesn't attach any conditions or deadlines, it's not up to this court or the board to make up conditions. It's up to the General Assembly to do that. And so they would say, well, there's no deadline, there's no prescriptions on who is competent to file it, provided that you're an agent of the corporation, and by all accounts, this man was. Mm-hmm. You've met the conditions of the statute, and they're entitled to the hearing. I'd be curious to see what your response to that would be.
Sure. And you know, as you said, Your Honor, the issues in those cases were primarily jurisdictional. They concerned the question of whether the notice of appeal was actually, and I know my time is up, but was actually sufficient to confer the BTA's jurisdiction. To answer your question quickly, you know, here we're talking about the filing of a request for hearing. It's not the same thing as filing a notice of appeal, even if the court viewed those to be similar. And all that, the primary reason why the board denied this request for hearing was because they did not present good cause for why they requested it so untimely. And the problem with it is that if the court were to remand this case back down, you would send a message to all board litigants that they could wait until the briefing date, because that is when the appellant here actually filed a request for hearing, was on the briefing date, the due date of the brief. So if a litigant can wait till that time, you know, this is after they've seen the other party's full case theory laid out in their brief based on the existing record, and that's fundamentally unfair, Your Honor, and extremely prejudicial to the other side. And then secondly, that would reset the case management schedule all over again. You'd have to go through discovery, trial, post-hearing briefs. It could potentially take months to go through that. The parties would have to expend a lot more resources. The docket would be slowing down. So, you know, the board has an interest in maintaining the progress of its docket and judicial economy. So, and we believe that's why the board held that it was unreasonable here, that they did not show good cause. There was no sufficient reason why they needed to wait that long. The appellant was aware that this was set for written argument and not hearing. And, Your Honor, there's got to be...
Counsel, I'm going to ask you to wrap up real quick here. Okay. You use your time.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. There's got to be a limit placed on this. It can't be open-ended. Your ability to request a hearing can't be open-ended and unlimited. You have to be able to have a limit set so that the board can manage its docket. And with that, Your Honor, if there are no further questions, we respectfully ask this court to affirm the decisions of the BTA and the tax commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you saved 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
So I'd like to start by just addressing the timeline. If the board wants a deadline and wants to say it's for efficiency in all purposes, there's a procedure to go about putting in rules, getting comments from the public, and putting those rules in place, a deadline. It's not about coming back with an arbitrary deadline after the fact. You pointed out also a good point that we put is the joint motion. We didn't have a brief filed in that case, and our request was made the time, so we didn't see their brief before we requested a hearing. But to have someone say, well, you can join me in a motion, but you can't request a hearing, it's unconscionable. But let me go back to what the council's arguing, that all this equipment specialized. Let me go back to this. All the equipment specialized, but then let's go back to what Zangerle found. Let's go back to what Funtime. Property is real property if it has a relationship to the land or improvements already constructed thereon as to be necessary or beneficial to its enjoyment. independent of the business presently carried on. In other words, that own business. And the property is a business fixture if it could be used only in a particular business. Only. So if they're saying that an HVAC, and the building was sold, and the HVAC wasn't taken, the floors weren't taken, none of the stuff was taken, the building was sold as is. So this is saying that the business fixture definition under 5701.03 should be narrowly defined. Otherwise, like all the cases have said, it encapsulates all real property definitions. And what it looks like, you know, the commissioner and the BTA are arguing is that it's not saying common to any buildings. It's saying common to all buildings. And that's not how the statutes read. And so I also wanted to just quickly go back to one final point is the penalties. Now, the only way that this court can affirm penalties is if the abuse of discretion and the BTA found correctly. PCM relied on 18 years of BTA case law from fund time to when they took all these positions, relying on authority to take those positions. So to say that they didn't have...
How do I know that you relied on 18 years of case law? I mean, I didn't see it in your petition for reassessment. I didn't see it in your board brief.
Well, I mean,
I could infer that you did, but it never came across to me that it was expressly communicated to the tax commissioner.
Yeah, I can't say that it expressly was. I don't know if it has to be. I mean, there's been cases where, I see, can I just finish up?
Sure, take a minute.
Cases where, you know, taxpayers have relied on just publications from the department, which can't even be relied on everyone, or just notifications. So I can't say expressly if it was in there, but looking at the way businesses work, they looked at the laws and they actually put their positions in place. Otherwise, I think that's it, since my time's over.
Okay. Well, thank you, counsel. The case is submitted, and you will be advised of our decision. Marshall, would you adjourn?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.